When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Celtic Stuff Live.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. I'm your host, Justin Poulin. Joining me, as always, John Duke. And two more wins in the books, John. An opening night comes up next Wednesday. I bet we'll have one more show before the opening night against the Philadelphia 76ers. Steve Bulpet, since we last met, had an article quoting Al Horford and maybe some of the contributing factors to why he moved on and went to Philly. It almost sounded like he was unaware of the fact that the Celtics did have an opportunity to potentially re-sign him. But at the end of the day, I think that's probably just making it a little bit softer out of respect to Boston. And at the end of the day, it was about the money. But we could talk about that a little bit during the show. We're definitely going to be talking about Jaylen Brown and his handle, because while it was a little sloppy in game one, all of a sudden it's looking really nice in the last couple of games. Great passes out of the post, drive and dish, little wraparound passes, lots of handle. I mean, really very, very exciting. If we see more of this Jaylen Brown the entire season, and I understand that the opponents weren't necessarily super high quality, if we continue to see this, it's going to be very good. And at the end, the other thing I want to make a point about with the handle is I'm not sure the quality of the opponent really matters in this scenario. I think just having the handle or not having the handle has really been Jaylen Brown's maybe struggle before this. I'm not sure it was a defensive thing. It was just losing control as he was attacking the rim and not knowing what he was going to do with the ball. That really has not been evident in the last two games. And the other thing I want to make sure we talk about is who isn't behind Carson Edwards and Tremont Waters. Holy moly, are they fun to watch. Right, John?
Holy, it's a lot there, man. But I like everything you're laying out. I mean, And I would also probably add to that, just as we talked about the first time, is that Jason Tatum is still putting his head down and going to the basket, too. So all good stuff around. But to jump off what you just said, I think what I'm impressed with Jaylen is the left hand, the use of the left hand. I mean, it was all right, finishing with the left, looking to finish with the left. You know, it's funny, a year ago, you could tell a lot of these guys, they took the summer, they went and worked on the things that they thought that they needed to do, they brought it back, and none of the pieces fit. Whereas we're three preseason games into this season, and immediately, forget about how everyone's interacting and how they're all getting along, which is huge, but just how the pieces of what these guys have added to their games and have made the whole team a much more potent and quite frankly flammable force. I think it's such a great sign moving forward. And then you add on top of that the chemistry, and you know, you saw them probably during one, I think it was one of Taco's dunks, and like Kemba's hanging on, and they're, you know, Kemba and Marcus Smart are getting dog brothers. I mean, there's just so much good stuff going on right now.
The camaraderie,
it's,
right?
It's amazing.
Another article that was out there was about how they're really focused on the chemistry and the camaraderie and rooting for each other. And an interesting thought occurred to me after the game against Magic, which was Kemba Walker was out, how the first game went. So Kemba Walker is out, and all of a sudden there's all this ball movement, and Smart is playmaking, and Gordon Hayward is playmaking, and I'm thinking to myself, to this huge lead, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe the ball dominant point guard is just not a fit for the Brad Stevens team, even though it seems like it's like his thing, right? Like he's had a ball dominant point guard who's, you know, carried the offense since he started winning when Isaiah Thomas arrived, and before that it was a struggle, right? So I started to think, well, maybe it really doesn't work that way. It's just we've accumulated enough talent now. And he who should not be named he who shall not be named is out of the equation. Did we really need Kemba Walker? And then, of course, Kemba comes back for the game against Cleveland, and that some ball movement, that crisp passing, that unselfishness, that finding the mismatch, that up-tempo offense and dogged defense, everything that we wanted to see last season comes out a second game with Kemba on the floor and Kemba being unselfish. And I thought to myself, nope, that was just coming off of that very first kind of ugly game against the Hornets, and then we don't have Kemba, and the team is showing all of that, but Kemba comes back, and they're still showing it. And it makes the first game an oddity, and it says that this camaraderie, this chemistry, and this Brad Stevens-style offense that we wanted to see all last year is 100%, and that Kemba is bought in a way that he who shall not be named could never have been bought in.
That's right. No, and look at the style of play that they played with. I mean, the opponent's different in all three. Arguably, the Magic, obviously, are the toughest, I would say, of the three teams that they've played. But
not that night. Really,
well,
not that.
But yeah, I don't know. But you look at those teams, and the Celtic teams, I mean, every night, it was the same. It was the same type of effort. I mean, you know, some people are going to make shots, miss shots. I mean, that stuff happens. But it wasn't such a situation which you saw last year where you'd play Edwards one way.
Shot,
well,
I swear to God,
I don't know.
Dude.
But
man, this is on fire.
But style of play is important. And last year, the style of play varied dramatically who the point guard was. That's not the case here. You know, this is the team's effort, 1-15, 1-17. And, you know, Carson Edwards, you weren't jumping to him. I mean, the kid, he's a bucket. He just, that run in the third quarter was just like, wow, this guy. I mean, the whole preseason, all summer league. But man, is he fun to watch.
This will translate. There's no doubt it's going to translate. As a guard coming off the bench, he is instant offense. The confidence is ridiculous. He is so out there, and it will not matter who else is on the floor. It's just not part. It's not a factor in his game. I realize that there are moments when he's out there against other teams, you know, second units and even third units, and I get that he could be capitalizing on that, but that's not it. He knows how to use the screen. He knows how to use the pick. He knows how to get open. He's great off the ball. He still has some really good on-ball, like, playmaking he's done, which for somebody who's such a spark plug from a shooting standpoint, you wouldn't expect him to be able to make some of the plays that he's made to contribute to the offense and be unselfish as well. You almost think he would be that black hole who's constantly shooting, especially when he's never missing. I mean, he literally is almost never missing. He's been so hot lately. Mm-hmm. But he's also, for an undersized-ish guy, extremely strong. So, you know, yes, there's going to be mismatches if they get in a switch on one of the bigs. But outside of that, different guards and whatever, I think that perimeter defense, and you know how it makes this, wants to get on the ball and up in their mug quickly. He wants to stall that offense out on the perimeter and not give them a lot of room to shoot. That's something that Carson Edwards is capable of doing defensively. And then at the same time on offense, I mean, he's not going to be the first option. He's going to get himself open, and he's going to be able to get a shot. I think for the lead guard, no, he's never going to be a lead guard. But as a third/fourth maybe option, he's going to find ways to get open, and he just misses in his veins.
I don't know if he, you know, I don't know if he can't be a lead guard. I mean, but I think right now his skill set is really down that road of being the hot shooter, you know. It seems like, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, I don't think it's necessarily a situation where, you know, he couldn't grow into that and become more of a playmaker. But the beautiful part about where the Celtics are right now is that they don't need that. They just need him to go out there and get buckets, right? And they've got a chance.
Think about how much they didn't have any offense on the second unit in past years.
Sure.
And not score.
Well, and to the point that we talked about after the first game, I noticed the rotations changed a little bit, at least through the first three quarters, but really the first two quarters, where Brad always had Seemingly, he had one of either Tatum or Hayward in with Brown, and it didn't put them in a bad spot per se, but it really I think it allowed the playmaking to keep going, but also to get enough space. So, you know, Jalen had those driving lanes. He could keep doing what he's doing. They were taking, I felt, too much of a step back by putting everything in the hands of Marcus Smart and his Cantor and Jalen Brown that first game. Since then, and particularly we saw here at game three, a much more fully throated effort of what this, I think, this Celtics rotation is going to look like, and giving everyone the chance to shine, which is, I think, really important for these guys' development, but also for this team. This individually, they need to feel that. And I think that was part of that ceiling they were bumping in their head up against.
Well, instead of separating them and trying to compartmentalize their contributions, they now are saying, you three are going to be on the floor a lot together. And so the two of them on the floor at a time, that continuous chemistry, right? So you, to your point, yes, instead of Brown being isolated, but also the fact that Hayward, Brown, and Tatum are in the starting lineup. So why not have two of them in at any given time? I mean, obviously, when we get into the second half of these preseason games, we start to see more semi-Ojeley, and they go a little bit deeper into the bench. But in that first half, when you're really getting a glimpse at what the regular season rotations may be looking like, that's a perfect example of, let's keep two of these three guys together because we want them to continue to be able to play off of each other in whatever machination. And I think it was Tatum that they talked to about it, but it might have been Hayward. But they said that, like, look, we're the three of us are learning better how to play together because we're going to be spending a lot of time on the floor together. And it doesn't make any sense to have Jalen spending a ton of minutes learning out by himself and then trying to integrate and starting lineup. What is the out of a game? And he's supposed to do because the rest of the game he's going to be on his own. You might as well bring him off the bench in that scenario and start Marcus Smart. So if you're not going to do that, and I agree they shouldn't because it's the switchability that's going to mask the lack of a true interior defender on this team, those three should be out there as much as possible together in their rotations.
Yeah, and I think Tice, we should talk about Tice because Tice has been huge, particularly, you know, in the second game and the third game.
Everybody's granting him the starting center role already.
Yeah, and I maybe that's true. I think that's it seems to be working, and I think Brad's going to ride the hot hand the whole year, you know. Hoping someone's hand is hot, you know. Ennis defensively has been as much of an issue as expected.
He's such a bench guy. He's perfect for the bench.
The question is, what's going to happen on opening night? You know, can they afford to play Tice opening night when Tice has gotten absolutely destroyed in past years going up against Embiid? So that may be the test of that. And Brad said it tonight, or said it Sunday in the post game. You know, he said, look, we're going to do this game by game. So, you know, I think perhaps Tice may get the edge in terms of most starts, but certainly they're going to see a rotating cast of characters in there. But I'm not sure if anyone has missed a shot with Cantor guarding them, you know, like he'll all of a sudden, I mean, every time if you're driving to the hole, if you're shooting over the top and from three, he's closing out, whatever it is. Every single time I see Enes Kanter guarding someone and they're shooting, that ball is going in. You know, it's hilarious to me, but it won't be as hilarious when these games count. So that will be a bit of a bummer. we need to avoid that if we can. But it seems like over and over and over again that's exactly what's happening. You know, that he's giving up these shots. I think Tice has that flow. He knows where he's doing. He knows what Brad was expecting of him. I just don't know if the Celtics are in a spot right now with. I mean, I'd like it for me, Time Lord. I thought Time Lord, game three was certainly his best game. I thought defensively he was in the right spot more times than he wasn't. But it's really going to be a challenge, I think, for the Celtics to be able to figure out some nights where they need some guys with heft. And he's Time Lord is that guy, I think, you know, is going to struggle in those situations. He's the guy
Heft
I can see falling
out.
Game. Yeah, and
Heft
he's
is not his game. And I'm not really all that impressed with Poirier or whatever. He's kind of been meh. But I guess occasionally they're going to need somebody who is a little bit more of a traditional center, back to the basket kind of guy, et cetera. But one thing I do think is you had mentioned Theis kind of fitting into that role and riding the hot hand, and I completely agree. And I definitely think Williams is going to get minutes. Like you said, game three was his best game. He looked really strong. He definitely altered a lot of shots, and that was on full display. And he's had some good passes, like everything that we heard about him being committed to moving the ball. I think that's all very much in play. So I'm excited about that. But Cantor's coming off the bench, in my opinion. I do like, though, that the second chance opportunities, you've already seen that. And that's why he's such a good fit coming off the bench, is like we said before, if Carson Edwards isn't the one taking the shot and not missing ever, if that's the case, and somebody else is shooting and they get a miss, what I love about Cantor is that second chance opportunity. And I think we talked about this even before the season started, was just offensive rebounding would be so nice to see with this club. And so if he gobbles those up and gives them second chance and they just stay even on that second unit, I'll take it. Because I think that first unit, regardless of the matchup at center, is going to be so aggressive with on the ball pressure and defensively, and then so good with the ball movement and finding the open man. Especially, I think we're going to get more and more out in transition. We're going to see much more up-tempo attacking as the season goes on, too, that I think they're going to be able to stake themselves to some good leads with that starting lineup. And I think Marcus Smart coming off the bench, at least for a certain amount of time, and being able to lay down some defense on the second unit and gobbling up some offensive rebounds, I think if the bare minimum, they're going to be able to stay even on that second unit. And that's more than we can say for almost every year that has gone on. We've had some really good starting lineups that have been able to stake some leads, and they just keep watching them evaporate. If we can just get a second unit to break even on offense, defense, that would really lead to probably a good extra 6 to 8 wins a season.
Yeah, I know, and that's very true. And I think the defense, I think we're going back to the Brad Stevens teams that we've been used to, in that they're able to pull off games that no one else expects them to. Second half of a back-to-back, although they're not as many back-to-backs. You know, those schedule losses that that most people run into. And I think that what we're going to see is that everything prior to last year is going to still be true. And when we look at Brad's career, it's going to kind of go up and then it's going to dip. And then we're right back to where we were in terms of that same ascension. And everything we've seen from this team kind of leads us to believe that. And if this team can take that second round, take the, you know, that kind of those bench units, and all of them can play with that aggression that you were talking about in the first, that kind of starting group, I think they could be actually a top 10 defense. I don't think that's beyond reason. I don't know that they can play that way in
the
playoffs.
There's not enough.
Because they'll slow
not
down.
Not enough good centers for that not to be the case. Yeah. On a night-in, night-out basis, that's the area that might give them trouble defensively, but there's not enough good ones in the league for them not to climb into the top 10 right, with the amount of switchability and effort that they're going to have from this team. Agreed?
Oh, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
All right, follow Celtic Stuff Live on Twitter, at CSL underscore Tweet Live, as well as your host. I'm at CSL underscore Justin. John's at CSL underscore Duke. The entire CLNS Media Network at CLNS Media. Facebook.com/CLNS fans and download the CLNS Media app for iOS and Android. Simply search CLNS Media in your app marketplace. And finally, the YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNS Media for Celtic Stuff Live, the roundtable, and high definition full length locker room interviews and the Garden Report, with the first game of the season coming up next Wednesday. Yes, football season in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the entire season. You can even bet on wild proposition bets, and you could have made a lot of money if you'd guessed Jay Gruden as the first head coach to get canned. But who will win the Dolphins game? Not the Dolphins. It was the Redskins. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head on over to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right, John, where are we going for the second half of the show? 20 minutes, go.
Well, I think we got to talk about Al Horford's comments, because I think they're very interesting, personally. Al Horford told Steve Beaupad, had a chance to chat with him, talked about, you know, his departure and why he left, saying a couple of points of note. I want to say the first one that I think was of note was that, you know, that if he had known Kemba was going to come, he might have thought differently about his desire to leave. You know, the timing is very important here, right? You know, Kyrie, seemingly people are feeling like he's out the door. There's a secret suitor team who has apparently offered a big contract to Horford. The Celtics apparently themselves don't even know it. And then we find out, I think it was the night of, or maybe the next day, that Horford was going to Philly. Now, the timing was interesting because certainly before the deadline, we knew that Kemba and the Celtics had come to an agreement or whatever kind of language they were using. But so there was a time, things were not on the dotted line, where Al Horford could have said, you know, sorry, Philly, I know you're interested, but I'm going to return to Boston. And apparently there was an opportunity. Steve Beaupet further reports that the Celtics could have gotten a three-way sign and trade deal to be able to get Kemba and keep Al Horford. But there was one problem. And what was that problem, Justin?
What was the...
Al didn't want to be here.
Do you really think he didn't want to be here? Or do you just... Because the way that whole thing went is it definitely sounded like Kyrie soured him, right? And
totally.
So I think that...
He must not be named, Justin.
Oh,
he
yes.
Must not be named.
I swear.
Get it right.
Well, who told us? Who's listening to the show, John? Who's listening to the show?
Well, Enes Kanter was remarking about calling that player, the former number 11, he who must not be named. Now, maybe there's others out there. Maybe there's a lot of Harry Potter fans. Maybe Kanter's a big Harry Potter fan. I don't know. But this is a thing of late for us. So, you know, Enes, if you're listening, thank you. We'd love to have you on the show. Get into our DMs. We'll chat and get you on the show sometime soon.
Yeah, definitely. Would love to talk to him, no doubt. And, well, I don't know. You've been giving him some criticism on the show. So
absolutely.
The fact that he would quote the show is actually, you know, that he's pretty thick-skinned. Although, given his background, you could imagine that. So here's the deal. At the end of the day, Al Horford, I think, got soured and needed a fresh start, but it's all about the money, in my opinion. And I think he kind of said, you know, but if they had traded for like Kemba Walker midseason or something, and there had been some chemistry and some promise for this year, then maybe Al Horford would have taken a slight discount because he would have had reason for optimism. But for him to start all over and see what happened with even Kemba Walker, no matter how much Kemba's reputation precedes him, et cetera. You know, I think at the end of the day, at that point, more money made the difference for him. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, the money, yeah, right. And you know, the other question about the money with Horford is, do you even want to pay it? Should you want to pay it? If this team is ready.
Not 4 years.
Right,
nope,
right.
Not 4 years.
They're ready made to contend this year if they have Al Horford. But where are they in 3 years if they're still paying Al Horford $30 million? That's a tougher choice. You know, and sure, you don't have to play time forward until then. But
I'm not sure. This is the one thing I'm going to say. I'm not sure that Al Horford doesn't hold them back based on how they want to play with this roster. even this year. I'm not saying that Al Horford doesn't give you better chances at a championship. I'm not that stupid, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying based on how this team wants to play, and I know he's super unselfish, but this team could be super up-tempo, super up-tempo. And I'm not saying Al is slow and he wasn't willing to play up-tempo, but I'm not sure he's able to play up-tempo the way this team might be able to play up-tempo this year.
And I don't know, I don't know if you saw Marcus Smart's, I don't even say it's criticism, but just talking about how the Celtics will play differently this year, and said, you know, sometimes, you know, we love Al, but sometimes you need a guy who's going to go in there and roll the rim and throw down, you know? And so Al was kind of responded to that and said, well, you know, Marcus knows I can do more than that. But I think there's some truth in that. Look, it's great to have somebody who's so flexible and so versatile and can do so many things. I would rather take that versus not have it. But when there's so many players who have abilities, you know, Gordon Hayward's, and you have a growing playmaking sense from a guy like Jason Tatum, you know, you can't take advantage of that when your center is, you know, needs to make decisions and such a good decision maker. You can't grow if that guy's in your way. So by removing Horford from the situation, those, you know, those guys will see their game grow and you'll see more traditional post play. But even with that, I think Horford did as much as he could while he was here, but the age thing is what gets me. You know, that's the hard one, I think, Justin, that I can't get over, is that the age and the money. You know, if he was on a declining
that's
salary,
that's just too much to commit with all these young guys coming up for contracts.
Exactly.
We had talked about him doing a longer term deal at a lower rate that would have made it more palatable so that they could have signed some of these younger guys over time and built it. And you're 100% right about that. But I seriously think, and I'm not speaking off of two, you know, subpar opponents in the preseason and going deep on the bench and the way that the game started, but I seriously think that there, I said this last year, that the thing that drove me crazy about he who will not be named was the fact that that ball didn't move and it slowed down. And even when guys weren't shooting, that they didn't have an opportunity to shoot their way out of it, because instead it would get stuck with a dominant ball handler. And I honestly have felt all along in the Brad Stevens era that more shot attempts was good for them, that if they played an up-tempo ball pressure style of defense and got a little more West Coast with it, that they were, that his style of offense is built for that. It's interesting that he's mired in the Eastern Conference, because I do think he's more suited for a West Conference style of play. And I think that we could break the mold on this Eastern Conference by playing that way. And so the more ball shot attempts that everybody gets, the more likely they are to shoot their way out of a funk, especially when the pressure's not on them. Even in the postseason, in that series against Milwaukee, as soon as all the pressure was on Kyrie and he didn't think that they were going to be able to do it, what happened to the ball? It didn't drop anymore. Even he lost his confidence and said, that's whatever, it's time for to put this one in the books. I'm going to leave Boston. I'm going to go do my thing with KD. Time to move on. Da, da, da. It's easy. It's human nature. People get that way. And even during the middle of the season, when you're not getting it done and you're struggling, and we've seen it happen at the start of several seasons over the last two or three, where players, you just had a funk and weren't getting off to a hot start. And then all of a sudden it just pulled the entire team down. And then all of a sudden by January, it's like, will the Celtics find their way? Will they be able to? Well, the truth is if they played an up-tempo style, and I said this last year and the year before in late November, early December, that I thought they should abandon the commitment to defense, not completely, but stop worrying about it so much and just try to get the ball to go in so that they could get their attitude right and then refocus on defense. Do you remember me saying that?
I do.
And I think the way that this team will play, they'll still have an emphasis on defense, but the moving the ball around, guys are going to be able to shoot their way out. And it's what we've said all along. It's not my night. I don't have it tonight. I think this team's going to be more willing to just let that guy go do the little things for that night because the ball wasn't dropping, move on and get to the next night, and their memories are going to be shorter, and thusly they will be far more successful this year. I know I said, 48 wins this season? I thought they would get one less win than last year. But just based on the attitudes, and, man, I'm so in tune with just, you know, camaraderie, chemistry, attitude. I think attitude is everything. I've seen it. You've seen it.
Totally.
You coach sports, and it's real. Mm-hmm. It is a very real thing. And you can say, oh, yeah, these guys are pros, and they're above that, and then it's not true. Every single one of these guys is human. And if you've ever coached a team on any level, attitudes and positivity and energy and enthusiasm has everything to do with success. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they will climb into the 50s for win total.
Yeah, you know, I would say my 53, I think, is where I went. I was hoping that this would – I don't think I was expecting it to be this good. And it's real. You know, there's a lot of times everyone's lost 20 pounds and, you know, 85 pounds of muscle, and they grew 3 inches at vertical height, and, you know, their wingspan.
Kanter's going to play defense.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's always that, you know. But remember the year before, 2 years ago, before, you know, Hayward got hurt, and they had a really nice kind of, you knew going into that season that they had something. They had some chemistry. They had something that made that team special. And, of course, in 5 minutes, you know, it all goes kaput. But I think that's real. I think those attitudes and that just that camaraderie, it matters. And you see it and you feel it. And so, you know, teams that can, as you said, who can take that on the defensive end, take that energy – when you put effort into the defensive end and everyone has to give that effort, it seems to also then lead itself to everyone giving that same effort on the offensive end, I think, too. When you have one guy who says, well, I'm not going to do that, and that pulls the defense down, and invariably it pulls the offense apart as well. So this year, where everyone's trying, everyone's doing what they can, I think, you know, we had – Jason Tatum had 9 rebounds in that game. He had 4 points, but he had 9 rebounds. I can't think of anything that I would think, oh, Tatum had a bad game. He was involved. He was doing what he could. He had that block of Jetty Osman. You know, kind of, I mean, that's the type of play, you know, that makes you special.
Osman?
Yeah.
What? Osman. What was the Osman? No, he's Osman.
He's not like Marie, yes. Osmond.
Yes, he is. He's like, no, Osmond. That's exactly how Gorman says it. He doesn't say Osmond. He says Osmond. He did block his ass.
He blocked him. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And that's, you know, he was talking. Tatum was talking to Pop about how do I become special, and Pop said it's when you can do things that aren't scoring that make your team great. You know, things that Tim Duncan did all the time. You know, things that Mano did all the time. I mean, that's part of what made those Spurs team great, is that not that those guys were stars and they scored 35 points a game. They were doing everything. And I think that might be a lesson that Tatum took in. You know, yes, people are bullying him about the Kobe stuff, which I think is completely stupid. Why would you challenge
that?
That
is the stupidest narrative ever.
Don't get into it, guys.
But here's the other thing. And then if you read all the social media posts about it, but then you actually watch it in context, it's like he's not even bothered. But if you read the social media posts, it's like he was defensive, right? Did you notice that? The way that they position it is like he's defensive. Like he's saying, no, 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 there was nothing with Kobe. No, you're interviewing him. And if you actually look at it, he's like, you're lucky he had a sense of humor with it, you friggin' idiots. You know what I mean? Like, it's a stupid line of questioning. The mid-range jump shot. Okay. I saw Hayward take several mid-range jump shots in the last couple of games.
Yeah.
Everybody takes mid-range jump shots. Right. Well, wait a second. Hold on. Did you work with Kobe? Just because it's just so dumb. The whole thing is like, and I will say this. If the media does to Tatum what they did to Kyrie, I will have a problem with that. I felt like Kyrie brought it on himself, but if this is the new kind of game and they play this game with Tatum, it will sour me, because it's just this one's a miss mark. You know, Kyrie brought it on himself, but Tatum has done nothing to bring it on himself. That right there is just sensationalistic crap because it's Kobe and the Lakers. And granted, January 31st, I was super, super pissed on the train home on the down Easter back to Portland after we had MVP chance for Kobe because the Celtics had Paul Pierce out and they stunk up to high heaven and we hadn't traded for Ray Allen or Kevin Garnett yet. And I get it 100%. And I got no love for Kobe, but this line of questioning for a basketball player who didn't grow up in Boston, who got drafted by the Celtics, who grew up watching a player that he loved, like, get over it. This one's a non-story.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a non-story, but it's got Kobe's name, which means it gets picked up, you know, and everyone talks about it worldwide. That's what it comes down to, I guess, but it's too bad because it's really unfortunate.
It's not cool to Tatum, and you're going to alienate the guy.
Exactly.
You're going to alienate the guy. Right. And next year when we offer him an extension, and it's the one that we actually want to get done, he's going to say no and take us to the off season. Fortunately, we'll definitely match. Who knows what happens with Brown? He keeps playing like this. We'll probably match.
Well, and they did pick up his option for the following year. So that happened today as well. Before we wrap, okay.
No. I know where you want to go, but that is the outtake.
That's too long for it to be an outtake, isn't it?
All right. What do you want to do?
Go ahead. We can make it as long as we want. It's a podcast. Well,
where are you going? Let's make sure we're synced.
There's only one answer, which is taco.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah. Here we are. This broadcast will be available on demand on the CLNS Media mobile app. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @CSL_Justin and @CSL_Duke. Our heartfelt thank you to everybody for tuning in. And remember that you can help support the show by subscribing to Taco Fall on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd love it if you gave us a rating and a review because your feedback is important to Taco Fall. And for staff writer Taco Fall, executive producer Larry H. Russell, the founder of CLNS Media, Nick
Taco Fall.
And my co-host, John Duke.
Taco Fall.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Celtic Stuff Live.
Celtic Stuff Live.
Yeah,
Taco Fall.
Of course, man. Dude, the mania is bananas. But now it really will be mania because he's got a two-way contract, and that's where he's going to be, and you're going to be driving up the coast on a fairly frequent basis to watch him in a Red Claws uniform.
That's right. We call it, you know, he's going to be – there's just – I don't even know. Like, the mania that, like, hits Boston, I mean, I can't even imagine what this is going to be like. They're going to sell out the Expo. They're going to have to move games to larger arenas to be able to house everybody.
How much is that a factor in this?
Well, okay, so the Celtics bought, or they're under contract, I suppose, to purchase the team entirely. Until now, they've been still owned by local ownership. And the Celtics agreed to purchase the team outright from the family who had it, Bill Ryan, formerly of People's Heritage Bank and then TD Bank, and then they sold out and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the family still owns it. The team wanted to buy up the Red Claws, the Celtics team. And so I don't think that's gone through fully yet, but the Celtics have been running the personnel operation there for 2 years, I think, now. And, you know, they're fully integrated. Darren Erman is going to be their head coach, who's obviously has a lot of experience. Worked with Doc, worked on the bench in Golden State, famously had a big run-in with Mark Jackson, and part of that whole thing with Scalabrine. I mean, there's a whole bunch to that. But anyway, Celtics love the guy. Have always loved the guy. Ainge loves the guy. Good buddy with Scalabrine. And I think they're going to get a lot. I think he's up here. He's already being paid by New Orleans, so he just kind of did this on a lark. And so now he's going to have a chance to work with a 7'7" or 7'6" or 7'5", depending upon which measurement you believe, project. And also, I would say, some very cool stuff. Tremont Waters will be up there, and man, is that guy fun to watch. So a lot of reasons for people to come
still
up.
Still that hesitation area, move.
But come down.
Over and over.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be fun games in the Portland Expo. So easy.
And didn't he throw a nice lob to Taco Fall? Wasn't it Waters in the last game that kind of lobbed it up? So they've already developed that little bit of chemistry there. It's just so weird to watch Taco dunk it like on a lob. He's bunny jumping. He's like 6 inches off the ground and then just drops it in. It almost doesn't look like real basketball. It's like taking one of those mini balls and being on an 8-foot net and just going up there and just playing around. You know, even myself at 5'9", it's like ridiculous. But it is fun to watch. I definitely think that he's probably worth the project. The player that gets cut out of this, you know, Green or Strus, is kind of whatever to me. So if it puts people in the seats and it potentially develops a player, I mean, he is 23 years old. It was funny when they kind of talked about it on the game broadcast the other night. And, you know, they're like, how old is he? And Tommy's like, he's like 19. And it takes a couple of minutes and Gorman's like, And he's like, yeah, he's 23. You know, you think that there's not a lot of development. Now, the angle that everybody's playing here is the fact that he didn't really get into basketball until he was 16 and came over stateside. So he's only had 7 years of basketball, and, you know, he's got some work to do, but I think the attitude is another big factor. You know, mm-hmm. It's not just the size, but I think they probably figure that they can get something out of him. But his learning curve is going to be, it's going to have to be incredibly fast at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, for him to really get a break, I mean, and I realize that if he constantly improves, that he'll always have an opportunity at 7'5". I get that, especially if he's a good player and he's a good guy on the bench and he helps with the chemistry. Like, anybody's going to take a flyer and add him. But for him to actually get legit influential playing time, it's, you know, all of that he's going to be looking for. He's got about a 3-year window to get really good. Not really good, but like good enough to be, you know, in the top 8 rotation.
Right.
And if he doesn't do that in the next 3 years, he'll always have an end of the bench kind of, you know, thing where he's, you know, he's a novelty and he might give you a couple of good minutes, but he's not going anywhere if in the next 3 years, you know, he can't be cracking an opportunity in the main rotation.
Yep. No, I think you're right. I mean, it's a 1-year deal, this two-way situation. And, you know, this is what we pretty much called for, or what I was looking for when this was all set up. I mean, Strus was always the one that was kind of more of the questionable of the two-way guys. I kind of hoped Tremont was going to be elevated, but to put Taco in that spot to be a two-way deal, most of the time he's in Maine, but he's still Celtic property. He's still able to, in terms of his contract, he's still able to play with the team and take advantage of team facilities. But realistically, he's going to be in Portland, and just playing and playing and playing and getting positive reinforcement. The only thing I'd say is I don't think the G League has really gotten to the level it needs to be as helpful to build teams. There's still far too much turnover on rosters. You know, you never know who's on rosters. They're just turning over constantly. And I don't think it's really the developmental tool that it needs to be. They've got to work on that, as the league does. It's, you know, I want it to be a lot more like double A baseball, where you're building your young players and you're bringing them up through. It's kind of, you know, I don't know. It's not the CBA. It's better than that, but it's just it needs more of that helping hand, that guiding hand, that development angle that I think baseball's done really well in terms of their minor league system. The basketball side needs to get there, and the Celtics, they've used some of their guys there in the past, but I wouldn't say they've had like the success, say, that the Raptors have had. Milwaukee's used their their G League team, certainly the Warriors as well. All of those teams have done really well in using their G League teams. I don't know that Boston has had as much success. Let's hope this is the start of a new trend with that, because at least they're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, they definitely. Yeah. And you know what? I'll just echo as we wrap up here about the whole purpose of the G League and, you know, how you would like it to be a little bit more like, you know, minor league baseball. The thing that they do in minor league baseball is they only develop the young guys. If you become an older guy, you're out. And I see why somebody who owns one of those franchises, especially if it's not the parent club that's trying to make money, they want to put a quality winning product out on the floor. I think to get the transition that you're talking about, you need more full ownership from the parent club that's purposefully trying to develop players and also giving many of those players an opportunity to come up. Having said that, they may need to have a little bit more ownership over a deeper level of talent to accomplish what you're talking about, because right now, so many of those guys that are sitting on the periphery of that bench are not controlled whatsoever by the parent club.
Right.
And the idea is that you're surrounding some of these young developing players with guys that are going to play the game the right way, even though they don't have quite the level of athleticism to succeed in the NBA because they can't get their shot off or they can't quite shuffle and get lateral the way that they need to stay in front of an NBA offensive player. And those things end up being a detriment. But as far as learning the fundamentals and being on the right spots on the floor, you're trying to surround them with those players. That could be the potential downside to doing what you're talking about. Too many people not knowing what they're doing at that level, that the few guys that you actually have a shot at bringing up and contributing at the parent club don't ever learn the fundamentals because nobody's ever in the right place on the floor.
No, they're not. And, you know, it becomes a very loose arrangement when you go to these games. You know, I've gone to a number of these Red Claws games, and it's just, it's basketball, but it just, the level, the intensity, it comes and goes, which I suppose is true at all levels. I mean, you see it from the dog days of January and February, where it's like, oh, is it time for the All-Star break yet? You know, there's certain parts of that, but I think we need control. There's a control. Add that third round of the draft or whatever it is. You need more players on the roster who can do that. And as you said, there's still NBA teams that don't have an affiliate. So there's a lot of work that the league still has to do before they can get there. But it needs to happen, because that's going to be the best thing for the final product. And certainly if they do go back to 18-year-olds being allowed in the draft, that almost has to come with it. Without question, that more robust.
So maybe you expand the draft to three, or no, you just leave it. They still pick people up, but anybody who's signed to their first contract can be signed to up to 4 years, and it doesn't matter where they play. You just have control over that player for 4 years, and if you keep them in the G League after year one and somebody else wants to offer them a fully guaranteed deal at the parent level, then at that point you have to make a choice to match, kind of like what we see in restricted free agency. You have to make a choice to either match that and give them a fully guaranteed deal with the parent club, or you relinquish their rights. That might be the best way to do it. That way because the other issue with taking these 4 years deals with guys that are coming out on a rookie deal and stashing them in the G League for too long is you might be stifling players if you have a glut of talent. And that wouldn't be fair either, because these players, they tend to develop very quickly if they're true stars or truly have a shot at a rotation. And after 4 years, they might not be able to get another job somewhere else. So there is an issue to be considered here that way.
That's true. I hadn't figured that. Yeah, you're right. There's more to it, but and probably it comes in the new CBA has a big part in how they shape that. I hope they could spend more time on that and spend a little bit less about figuring out who's getting the bigger piece of the pie, because it's important for the growth of the game, you know, and they need to figure it out. But I invite you all, this is my clarion call to all you Celtics fans, come up to Portland. It's a great place. You get great seats. You are right near the action. I mean, it's a hell of a fun time. And so it's if it wasn't for Taco Fall, but for any other reason too, come on up, because hell, it's going to be a lot of fun this year.
So, John, why don't you organize a game with fans of Celtic Stuff Live to go watch Taco Fall? You can sit with John Duke.
They wouldn't like that. They wouldn't like that.
Are you kidding me? Of course they would.
I am not fun to sit with at a game. I am way too focused.
I don't believe that for a second.
Oh, no. I'm locked in, man. I'm not locked on, mind you. But I'm definitely focused on what's going on out there.
The podcast that shall not be named.
Yes. The sunny right. Podcast that shall not be named. Oh, poor John.
Just having fun.
Poor John. We love you, fun. John.
First is all of his buddies ditch him, and then we start picking on him. That's not even fair.
That's not nice. We'll stay true. We're bros till the end. So, you know, yes, because you know what we needed? We needed yet another.
He does great with posting stuff, though. He does a good job on his social media. Now that he has the credentials, he's done a nice job.
Sure. I'm just glad that we're getting another Celtics podcast out there. Thank God for that, because we need more.
I might start a second one with somebody else just for fun.
I'm going to leave. All right.
You know what? We're here. And if you're still listening, John,
you're welcome.